Chapter 8. The next morning began with a colourful and lengthy sunrise, which Sunny saw from her hiding place at the bottom of Nevermore Tree. It continued with the sounds of awakening crows, which Klaus heard from the library in the barn, and followed with the sight of the birds making their familiar circle in the sky, which Violet saw just as she was leaving the inventing studio. By the time Klaus joined his sister outside the barn, and Sunny crawled across the flat landscape to reach them, the birds had stopped circling and were flying together uptown, and the morning was so pretty and peaceful that as I describe it, I can almost forget that it was a very, very sad morning for me. A morning that I wish I could strike forever from the Snicket calendar. But I can't erase this day, any more than I can write a happy ending to this book, for the simple reason that the story does not go that way. No matter how lovely the morning was, or how confident the Baudelaires felt about what they had discovered over the course of the night, there isn't a happy ending on the horizon of this story, any more than there was an elephant on the horizon of VFD. "Good morning," Violet said to Klaus, and yawned. "Good morning," Klaus replied. He was holding two books in his arms, but nevertheless he managed to wave at Sunny, who was still crawling toward them. "How did everything go with Hector in the inventing studio?" "Well, Hector fell asleep a few hours ago," Violet said, "but I discovered a few small flaws in the self-sustaining hot air mobile home. The engine conductivity was low due to some problems with the electromagnetic generator Hector built. This meant that the inflation rate of the balloons was often uneven, so I reconfigured some key conduits. Also, the water circulation system was run on ill-fitting pipes, which meant that the self-sustaining aspect of the food centre probably wouldn't last as long as it should, so I rerouted some of the aqua cycling."
"Ning,"
Sunny called, as she reached her siblings. "Good morning, Sunny," Klaus said. "Violet was just telling me that she noticed a few things wrong with Hector's invention, but she thinks she fixed them." "Well, I'd like to test the whole device out before we go up in it, if there's time," Violet said, picking up Sunny and holding her. "But I think everything should work pretty well. It's a fantastic invention. A small group of people could really spend the rest of their lives safely in the air. Did you discover anything in the library?" "Well, first I discovered that books about VFD rules are actually quite fascinating," Klaus said. "Rule number 19, for instance, clearly states that the only pens that are acceptable within the city limits are ones made from the feathers of crows. And yet rule number 39 clearly states that it is illegal to make anything out of crow feathers. How can the townspeople obey both rules at once?"
"Maybe they don't have any pens at all," Violet said. "But that's not important. Did you discover anything helpful in the rule books?"
"Yes," Klaus said, and opened one of the books he was carrying. "Listen to this. Rule number 2493 clearly states that any person who is going to be burned at the stake has the opportunity to make a speech right before the fire is lit. We can go to the uptown jail this morning and make sure Jacques gets that opportunity. In his speech, he can tell people who he really is and why he has that tattoo."
"But he tried to do that yesterday at the meeting," Violet said. "Nobody believed him. Nobody even listened to him."
"I was thinking the same thing," Klaus said, opening the second book, "until I read this."
"Tau he?"
Sunny asked, which meant something like, "Is there a rule that clearly states that people must listen to speeches?" "No," Klaus replied. "This isn't a rule book. This is a book about psychology, the study of the mind. It was removed from the library because there's a chapter about the Cherokee tribe of North America. They make all sorts of things out of feathers, which breaks rule number 39.
"That's ridiculous," Violet said.
"I agree," Klaus said. "But I'm glad this book was here instead of in town, because it gave me an idea. There's a chapter here about mob psychology."
"Was he?"
Sunny asked. "A mob is a crowd of people," Klaus explained.
usually an angry one. "Like the townspeople and the Council of Elders yesterday," Violet said. "In Town Hall, they were incredibly angry." "Exactly," Klaus said. "Now, listen to this." The middle Baudelaire opened the second book and began to read out loud. "The subliminal emotional tenor of a mob's unruliness lies in solitary opinions, expressed emphatically at various points in the stereo field."
"Tenor? Stereo?" Violet asked. "It sounds like you're talking about opera."
"The book uses a lot of complicated words," Klaus said, "but luckily there was a dictionary in Hector's library. It had been removed from VFD because it defined the phrase mechanical device. All that sentence means is that if a few people scattered throughout the crowd begin to shout their opinions, soon the whole mob will agree with them. It happened in the council meeting yesterday. A few people said angry things, and soon the whole room was angry."
"Phew,"
Sunny said, which meant, "Yes, I remember." "When we get to the jail," Klaus said, "we'll make sure that Jacques is allowed to give his speech. Then, as he explains himself, we'll scatter ourselves throughout the crowd and shout things like, 'I believe him!' and 'Hear, hear!' Mob psychology should make everyone demand Jacques' freedom."
"Do you really think that will work?" Violet asked.
"Well, I'd prefer to test it first," Klaus said, "just like you'd prefer to test the self-sustaining hot-air mobile home, but we don't have time. Now, Sunny, what did you discover from spending the night under a tree?" Sunny held up one of her small hands to show them another scrap of paper.
"Couplet,"
she cried out triumphantly, and her siblings gathered around to read it. "The first thing you read contains the clue, an initial way to speak to you."
"Good work, Sunny," Violet said. "This is definitely another poem by Isadora Quagmire."
"And it seems to lead us back to the first poem," Klaus said. "It says, 'The first thing you read contains the clue.'"
"But what does 'an initial way to speak to you' mean?" Violet asked.
"Initials? Like VFD?"
"Maybe," Klaus replied. "But the word initial can also mean first. I think Isadora means that this is the first way she can speak to us, through these poems."
"But we already know that," Violet said. "The Quagmires wouldn't have to tell us. Let's look at all the poems together. Maybe it will give us a complete picture." Violet took the other poems out of her pocket, and the children looked at them together. "For sapphires we are held in here. Only you can end our fear. Until dawn comes, we cannot speak. No words can come from this sad beak. The first thing you read contains the clue, an initial way to speak to you."
"The part about the beak is still the most confusing," Klaus said.
"Leucophris,"
Sunny said, which meant, "I think I can explain that. The crows are delivering the couplets."
"How can that be possible?" Violet asked.
"Loidja,"
Sunny answered. She meant something like, "I'm absolutely sure that nobody approached the tree all night, and at dawn the note dropped down from the branches of the tree."
"I've heard of carrier pigeons," Klaus said. "Those are birds that carry messages for a living, but I've never heard of carrier crows."
"Maybe they don't know that they're carrier crows," Violet said. "The Quagmires could be attaching the scraps of paper to the crows in some way, putting them in their beaks or in their feathers, and then the poems come loose when they sleep in Nevermore Tree. The triplets must be somewhere in town, but where?"
"Cow,"
Sunny cried, pointing to the poems. "Sunny's right," Klaus said excitedly. "It says, 'Until dawn comes, we cannot speak.' That means they're attaching the poems in the morning when the crows roost uptown."
"Well, that's one more reason to get uptown," Violet replied. "We can save Jacques before he's burned at the stake and search for the Quagmires. Without you, Sunny, we wouldn't know where to look for the Quagmires."
"Hassering,"
Sunny said, which meant, "And without you, Klaus, we wouldn't know how to save Jacques."
"And without you, Violet," Klaus said, "we'd have no chance of escaping from this town."
"And if we keep standing here," Violet said, "we won't save anybody. Let's go wake up Hector and get moving.
The Council of Elders said they'd burn Jacques at the stake right after breakfast.
Yikes,
Sunny said, which meant, that doesn't give us much time. So the Baudelaires didn't take much time walking into the barn and through Hector's library, which was so massive that the two Baudelaire sisters could not believe Klaus had managed to find helpful information among the shelves and shelves of books. There were bookshelves so tall you had to stand on a ladder to reach their highest shelves, and ones so short that you had to crawl on the floor to read their titles. There were books that looked too heavy to move, and books that looked too light to stay in one place, and there were books that looked so dull that the sisters could not imagine anyone reading them, but these were the books that were still stacked in huge heaps, spread out on the tables after Klaus's all-night reading session. Violet and Sunny wanted to pause for a moment and take it all in, but they knew they didn't have much time. Behind the last bookshelf of the library was Hector's inventing studio, where Klaus and Sunny got their first glimpse of the self-sustaining hot-air mobile home, which was a marvellous contraption. 12 enormous baskets, each about the size of a small room, were stacked up in the corner, connected by all sorts of different tubes, pipes and wires, and circled around the baskets were a series of large metal tanks, wooden grates, glass jugs, paper bags, plastic containers, and rolls of twine, along with a number of large mechanical devices with buttons, switches, and gears, and a big pile of deflated balloons. The self-sustaining hot-air mobile home was so immense and complicated that it reminded the two younger Baudelaires of what they thought of when they pictured Violet's inventive brain, and every piece of it looked so interesting that Klaus and Sunny could scarcely decide what to look at first. But the Baudelaires knew that they didn't have much time, so rather than explain the invention to her siblings, Violet walked quickly over to one of the baskets, which Klaus and Sunny were surprised to see contained a bed, which in turn contained a sleeping Hector.
"Good morning," the handyman said, when Violet gently shook him awake.
"It is a good morning," she replied. "We've discovered some marvellous things. We'll explain everything on our way uptown."
"Uptown?" Hector said, stepping out of the basket. "But the crows are roosting uptown. We do the downtown chores in the morning, remember?"
"We're not doing any chores this morning," Klaus said firmly. "That's one of the things we need to explain."
Hector yawned, stretched and rubbed his eyes, and then smiled at the three children.
"Well, fire away," he said,
using a phrase which here means, "begin telling me about your plans." The siblings led Hector back through his inventing studio and secret library and waited while he locked up the barn. Then, as they took their first few steps across the flat landscape toward the uptown district, the Baudelaire orphans fired away. Violet told Hector about the improvements she had made on his invention, and Klaus told him about what he had learned in Hector's library, and Sunny told him, with some translation help from her siblings, about her discovery of how Isadora's poems were being delivered. By the time the Baudelaires were unrolling the last scrap of paper and showing Hector the third couplet, they had already reached the crow-covered outskirts of VFD's uptown district.
"So the Quagmires are somewhere in the uptown district," Hector said. "But where?"
"I don't know," Violet admitted. "But we better try to save Jacques first." "Which way is the uptown jail?" Violet asked Hector.
"It's across from Foul Fountain," the handyman replied. "But it looks like we won't need directions. Look what's ahead of us."
The children looked, and could see some of the townspeople holding flaming torches and walking about a block ahead of them.
"It must be after breakfast," Klaus said. "Let's hurry."
The Baudelaires walked as quickly as they could between the muttering crows roosting on the ground, with Hector trailing skittishly behind them, and soon they rounded a corner and reached Foul Fountain, or at least what they could see of it. The fountain was swarming with crows, who were fluttering their wings in the water in order to give themselves a morning bath, and the Baudelaires could scarcely see one metal feather of the hideous landmark. Across the courtyard was a building with bars on the windows and crows on the bars, and the torch-carrying citizens were standing in a half-circle around the door of the building.
More of VFD's citizens were arriving from every direction, and the three children could see a few crow-hatted members of the Council of Elders standing together and listening to something Mrs. Morrow was saying. "It seems we arrived in the nick of time," Violet said. "We'd better scatter ourselves throughout the crowd. Sunny, you move to the far left. I'll take the far right."
"Roger,"
Sunny said, and began crawling her way through the half-circle of people.
"I think I'll just stay here," Hector said quietly, looking down at the ground.
But the children had no time to argue with him. Klaus began to walk straight down the middle of the crowd.
"Wait," Klaus called, moving with difficulty through the people. "Rule number 2493 clearly states that any person who is going to be burnt at the stake has the opportunity to make a speech right before the fire is lit."
"Yes,"
Violet cried from the right-hand side of the crowd.
"Let Shaq be heard."
Officer Luciana stepped right in front of Violet, who almost bumped her head on the chief's shiny helmet. Beneath the visor of the helmet, Violet could see Luciana's lipsticked mouth rise in a very small smile.
"It's too late for that," she said,
and a few townspeople around her murmured in agreement. With a clunk of one boot, she stepped aside and let Violet see what had happened. From the left-hand side of the crowd, Sunny crawled over the shoes of the person standing closest to the jail, and Klaus peered over Mr. Lesko's shoulder to get a good look at what everyone was staring at. Jacques was lying on the ground with his eyes closed, and two members of the Council of Elders were pulling a white sheet over him as if they were tucking him in for a nap. But as dearly as I wish I could write that it was so, he was not sleeping. The Baudelaires had reached the uptown jail before the citizens of VFD could burn him at the stake, but they still had not arrived in the nick of time.